Head On Radio News. I'm Bruce Birch. Not kowtowing to the extremist right, the U.S. Senate decided today to tackle immigration issues such as citizenship before making decisions related to securing the southern U.S. border. The vote was 55-40 against a proposal by Senator Johnny Isaacson, Republican of Georgia, who said that anything less than a border security first approach amounted to a, quote, wink and a nod one more time to those who would come here, end quote. Former President Bill Clinton was in Canada yesterday at a meeting of the World Leaders Forum. While speaking at the inaugural meeting of the forum, Clinton admonished Canadians to hang on to their health care system, saying that the U.S. system is a, quote, colossal waste of money, end quote, that is killing his country competitively. Former President Clinton pointed out that the portion of health costs spent on administration in the United States is nearly twice that of any other industrialized nation. He noted that health costs for American automakers are up to 15 times their Japanese counterparts, even if all the manufacturing is being done in the United States. A former counterterrorism chief at the CIA, Vincent Canestraro, told the New York Sun that FBI sources have confirmed to him that reporters' calls are being tracked as part of the probe, writes the Sun's Josh Gerstein in Tuesday papers. Mr. Canestraro, who has worked as a consultant for ABC, said, quote, the FBI is monitoring calls of a number of news organizations as part of this leak investigation. It is widespread, and it may entail more than those three media outlets, end quote. Under longstanding Justice Department regulations, prosecutors who subpoena a journalist's phone records are required to notify the reporter involved within 90 days of obtaining the records. The regulations state that in most cases, subpoenas should not be issued until after an attempt is made to negotiate access with the reporter. In the game of denying who is at fault, George Bush and Bell South both denied any involvement in the NSA domestic spying scandal. Bush said, quote, we do not listen to domestic phone calls without court approval, end quote. Bush did appear to acknowledge the NSA sweep of phone records indirectly, saying that the program referred to by a reporter in a question, quote, is one that has been fully briefed to members of the United States Congress in both political parties, end quote. For its part in the scandal, Bell South Corporation said Monday its thorough review found no indication it gave telephone records to the National Security Agency as part of a federal anti-terrorism surveillance program. Bell South released the statement, quote, based on our review to date, we have confirmed no such contract exists and have not provided bulk customer calling records to the NSA, end quote. This is News on the Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
You know why your head swivels on your neck? So you can share the road with motorcycles. Watch for bikes when you drive and help make this a safe riding season. A message from this station in the AMA. On the web at amadirectlink.com.
Tony Snow, the administration's new press secretary, got off to a great start today, referring to the NSA spying scandal as a tar baby. The story of the tar baby first came into popular American culture through Joel Chandler Harris's Uncle Remus stories. In the popular version, the character of Br'er Rabbit encounters a baby made of tar on the street. When the black, sticky dummy doesn't respond to him, he strikes it repeatedly, becoming stuck to it. In his preface to the book, Harris wrote, quote, I trust I have been successful in presenting what must be, at least to a large portion of American readers, a new and by no means unattractive phase of Negro character, a phase which may be considered a curiously sympathetic supplement to Mrs. Stowe's wonderful defense of slavery as it existed in the South. 21 locals of the United Auto Workers Union voted overwhelmingly to authorize a strike should Delphi Corporation unilaterally impose changes to its labor agreements. Over 95% of the votes cast authorized the UAW to call a strike. The union's vote is response to the Troy-based auto supplier's request to U.S. bankruptcy judge Robert Drain last week to nullify labor contracts and eliminate retiree medical and life insurance benefits. The approval was expected but does not mean a strike is certain. Both sides are awaiting Drain's decision, which is not expected until June at the earliest. With $900 million in its strike fund, the UAW could afford a strike of significant length. The union currently offers $200 for a full week on strike or $40 a day for less than a full week. Striking workers also would receive UAW health insurance that would start when Delphi cuts those benefits. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Arlen Specter toned down his rhetoric about the NSA domestic spying today. Instead of seeking to have the FISA court issue a ruling on whether or not the domestic spying is illegal, he has instead agreed to allow the administration to retain an important legal defense by allowing the court, which holds its hearings in secret, to review the program only by hearing a challenge from a plaintiff with legal standing, said a person familiar with the text of language agreed to by Specter and committee conservatives. An expert in constitutional law and national security, however, said that the change would allow the administration to throw up huge obstacles to anyone seeking to challenge the program's legality. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, good afternoon, good evening. This is Head On. It's your nightly confrontation with the facts. I'm Bob Kincaid. Great to have you along. In light of the fact that we had no show last night, and what with Dear Leader's speech going on and him, screwing up and being his weird little self, we've got plenty to talk about tonight. I've got a whale of a list right here in front of me. We can go any of a number of directions, not the least of which would be to talk about the... looky there, it's a Pentagon tape. And it shows a really fuzzy thing that might either be a jetliner or Lee Harvey Oswald, I'm not sure which, slamming into the Pentagon. They have not released Building 7's suicide note yet, however. Let's see. What? Okay, we got Bell South. We didn't release any records now that we've seen how much is $1,000 a day per... record released. We didn't release no records, okay? Okay, you mean old, nasty tassel loafered wearing trial lawyers can just go away now, okay? Please? Thank you. Because we didn't release no, phone records to the National Security Agency. No, we didn't do that. Okay? There's that. And then something for us all to enjoy after the show, perhaps. Run on over to WD40.com. You know, our pals, WD40.com, WBYAD40.com, WD40.com. And if you haven't seen it already, look at the photo, at the video of, look at, sounds like my grandmother. I like to look at the TV. Watch the video of Dear Leader that CNN accidentally ran last night before Dear Leader started, was ready to give his speechifying. Okay, do that. Then there's the whole speech thingy. The whole, what was that last night? Just, no, honest to God, what in the hell was he thinking? He managed to make everybody, you know, he made the ugly little racists mad. You know, the, secure our borders, we're not secure. That woman that wants to scrub toilets is a threat to national security. And he made the Minute Men, you know, you remember their wives gave them that nickname. They made the Minute Men very angry. And they made, and he managed to make, well, you know, it was another day with George Bush. He screwed up. But go and watch the video at WD40.com because they went to him early when he was rehearsalating. And in the course of rehearsalating, he, my fellow Americans, and then he the eyes roll up and you know, it's sort of, and he's, you know, Jesus, is that you in my ear? I hear you. What do you mean? Look at camera three, Jesus. Okay. And when you watch that, back up a bit, and remember the presidential debates when no one was talking to him. And, I mean, Kerry wasn't talking, Bob Schieffer, whoever the interviewer was, wasn't talking to him. All eyes were on him, and he said, wait, let me finish. And his eyes kind of roll up in his head on that one, too. Just see if you can sort of make the comparison, the connection between the two. Who is the person in George Bush's head? Is it Karl Rove? I don't know. Or is it some low-level function? Or is it God? I mean, does Dear Leader, when he's talking, do the eyes roll back in his head, whether he's got the little IFB earpiece in his ear or not? It's him again. I'm going to have to write a book. Maybe I can... What's that, Lord? There's some dinner plates buried underneath a tree in upstate New York, and I have to wear sacred underwear to go find them? Oh, my. So there's that. But actually, truth be told, because of the amount of grief that I have taken for my position on this immigration thing, because I hold it forth as a fraud on the American people, there is no immigration crisis. Well, you know, I share with you the books that I'm reading. And right now on my reading list is a book by a man named Ron Powers called Mark Twain, A Life. And, you know, it's the curse of humankind that every generation, we lose something with every generation that the next generation, you know, a step beyond, has to turn around and figure out again all on its own. A grand universal reinventing of the wheel, as it were. And that applies, it applies to, this immigration thing, too. Now, we are talking here, let me see, what year are we talking about here? You hear the pages? Yeah, we're talking about 1870, all right? Some 136 years ago. And 136 years ago, there was a Presbyterian minister in Brooklyn, New York, named Thomas DeWitt Talmage. And Thomas DeWitt Talmage had written an essay in a newspaper, this fine, upstanding Presbyterian man of the cloth, minister of the gospel. And he was complaining about the bodily odors of the working people in his congregation, in his church. Now, bear in mind, 1870, that would probably be Irish people. And there were, and as such, in New York City, hating Irish people at that point in time was raised to a high art. A few years later, and perhaps to a certain extent even in 1870, the next wave was coming along, and it was them Italians. Them Italians. And they were hated. They're coming in here, and, well, I'm sorry, wrong accent. they're coming in here and they're taking away all the jobs of the real Americans there. Okay, close enough. And so New Yorkers hated the Italians later. But before that, they hated the Irish. They hated the Eastern Europeans. They hated everybody who wasn't them. And it was that way around the country. This is a racist, prejudiced nation, okay? It is. It is what it is. So the Thomas DeWitt Talbage, Presbyterian minister, wrote this essay in a New York City newspaper complaining of the bodily odors of the working people who came to seek Christ Jesus in his church. And that got under Mark Twain's skin. And Mark Twain replied, and I quote, "We have reason to believe that there will be laboring men in heaven, and also a number of Negroes, and Eskimo, and a few Indians, and possibly even some Spaniards and Portuguese. All things are possible with God. We shall have all these sorts of people in heaven. But, alas, in getting them, we shall lose the society of Dr. Talmage." Why do I do that? Because Samuel Clemens was complaining about the same sort of ugly, hateful, nasty, filthy, dirty, disgusting, serpentine racism and classism that at present infects our country, and this time the vitriol is directed at persons of Latin American descent. Well, I'm not going to start this debate up tonight, but I just wanted to let you know that if you do agree with me, and if you do understand that this is a racism issue, and that it's a bogus issue, an excuse to engage in a little free-form racism, just for the fun of it, for a whole bunch of people in this country. But if you understand that for what it is, then you're on mighty solid footing, because you're sharing the same ground with none other than one of the greatest men outside of Benjamin Franklin that this country has ever produced, in the form of Samuel Langhorne Clemens. "We have reason to believe that there will be laboring men in heaven, and also a number of Negroes and Eskimo, a few Indians, and possibly even some Spaniards and Portuguese. All things are possible with God. We shall have all these sorts of people in heaven. But alas, in getting them, we shall lose the society of Dr. Talmage." Dr. Talmage and Chris Simcox and Congressman David Dreyer and Congressman Tom Tancredo, and even some erstwhile liberals. We shall lose their society as well, Brother Clemens. We shall. But you're in good company when you stand with humanity. But that's not what we're going to spend the night on. I just wanted to share that little bit, that bit of historical perspective from Mr. Clemens, just to let you know that there's nothing new about hating different people in this country. So we're going to take a break and come back. Where do you want to go next? Phone company? I got... Hey. Al Gore. Let's go to Al Gore. Or your phone calls. The phone number is 877-443-2366. That's 877, the number 4, head on. I'm Bob, and this is the Head On Radio Network.
Rudy Nuria.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nuria?
Nuria.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
Told Walmart to sell the Easter egg die kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. So now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the Decider. I'm the Decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network. On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss a tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
Let's see, 23 minutes after the hour on this Tuesday night edition, Tuesday afternoon edition, early Tuesday morning edition of Head On. Hell, it may be Wednesday morning for all I know. Yeah, it's Wednesday morning. Well, anyway. And, our RadioPower.org listener friends who are listening, sometime tomorrow. Makes me feel like a little bit of a time traveler. Welcome, each and every one of you. I'm glad to be with you. Now, just to update you a little bit about what happened last night. There was a god-awful thunderstorm that rolled through our little corner of Fayette County, West Virginia, and it was a dandy. If you live on flat land somewhere and you've never experienced thunder rolling and echoing through the mountains, it is a tighten-up experience because it comes at you from six to... It's like quadraphonic thunder. And somewhere along the way, thunderstorms inspire bad driving. Just like down here where I am in the last little toe hills of the Appalachians in northwest Alabama, two flakes of snow fall, and there are massive pileups on the highway because people can't drive in it. And so we have issues in the hills with thunderstorms. And just as quick as that thunderstorm came along, some wiseacre lost his mind and drove his car straight into a power pole, made a transformer explode, and nobody had electricity in our area until something on the order of 11:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. But, you know, the uninterruptible power supply has held up nicely, and we were able to back graciously off the air. Sorry for the rerun for the rest of the show. I apologize. But that, you know, I know people do sort of invest themselves in, well, you know, what happened to Bob and Agnes last night? Well, that's what happened to Bob and Agnes last night. Some idiot took out a transformer. But we're working on making sure that that doesn't go down anymore. Let's see. Let's go to the phones. Jim is with us. Hey, Jim, you're head on. Welcome to the program.
Good evening.
And how are you?
And how are you this evening?
I'm doing quite well. And Agnes has electricity, so all is right with the world.
Well, it wasn't so bad last night. After all, you had at least 30 minutes of me talking about how to keep the British end up.
True.
You know, Mr. Kincaid, I am by no means a prude, and I'm probably one of the most worldly people you'll ever meet, okay?
Okay.
But, you know, there is a part of me that has a lot of belief in the, you know, the church and Christ and things of that nature. And I hate to hear some of the stuff I hear that sort of denigrates that on both sides of the aisle, if you know what I mean. I hate to see that dragged in, that dragged through the mud by anybody. I really do.
Even Mark Twain.
Even Mark Twain. I mean, you said Saint Mark Twain. Who beatified him?
I didn't say saint.
I thought you did.
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
He would have been embarrassed by something like that.
Well, what church did he attend, or was he even religious? I don't think he was he?
Yeah, he was. He was. Oh, Lordy, he was raised in the church. He had the church crammed down his throat and over his head and beaten into him. And
but what was he as an adult?
He was raised, I believe, Presbyterian.
I don't think he really had much affiliation with those organizations after he.
But he frequently attended Henry Ward Beecher's church. In New York City, and I believe Mr. Beecher's brother had a church in Connecticut which he frequently attended.
What denominations were they, do you know?
It may have been Congregationalist.
Hmm.
Possibly Episcopalian.
That's interesting. The Congregationalist, I know they have a circular Congregationalist. That's a church in Charleston that's in the circle, but I was just wondering about that. But, you know, that's okay. You know, to each his own. And
yeah.
We'll all find out one day what it's all about, right?
Maybe.
Huh?
Maybe.
Well, I think you definitely will.
Well, I mean, I remember the very well-worn words of that question that was put to Bertrand Russell, and they said, Mr. Russell, you're a noted atheist. What do you think will happen to you when you die? And he answered quickly, I shall rot.
Well, yeah, that's right. But that's only one part of his being.
Well, you know, to him, no, that was the be-all and end-all of it.
Well, I'm afraid that, I don't know. You know, maybe so, but I think not. But anyway, moving on to some of the other things that you were touching on today about immigration and fearless leader and this, that, and the other. You know what? I see the thrashing and the asymmetrical behavior of Mr. Bush and his friends, and I see what they're doing and how they're upsetting people in Texas and things of this nature. This, to me, is just wonderful. I love it. And the more the merrier. And because maybe it will ultimately show these people up, A, what they really are, and B, it will make people realize how they've been fooled by them. You know, as you said before, they can reach power pretty easily, but they just can't hold it, and they don't know what to do with it. And all these plagues that are besetting them now are music to my ears.
Well, to hearken back to a phrase from another time, Jim, It is rather gleeful to watch them hoist themselves on their own petard.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, and when you do that, you blow up no one but yourself as you try to knock the city gates of somebody else's town down. However, I mean, you think about all the stuff that's happening. They can't blame the Democrats. And they,
No,
they can't blame anybody else. And, you know, basically, now when he sends all these National Guardsmen down there. I think he's going to have, what, 600 yards between each guardsman. They have no rifles or anything. I mean, what are they going to do to these people who are crossing the river and climbing the wall except say, hello, how you doing?
Stop, or I'll say stop again.
But, I mean...
Theoretically, they'll get on the radio and call the Border Patrol. That's part of the stupidity of this entire thing, Jim. If you've got a problem with not having enough Border Patrol agents, you don't try to dance along the fine lines of the Posse Comitatus Act. And the way they did that is by not... You know, did you notice, Jim, that they're not federalizing these National Guard troops? And yet Dear Leader's the one who's sending them in?
Well, you know, they have to have certain criteria met before he can federalize the National Guard and take it from under the control of the Adjutant General and the Governor, you know?
Didn't he federalize when he finally did get around to doing something? Didn't he federalize for Katrina?
I'm not sure if he did or not. He may have. That was a national disaster, and they may have been federalized. I'm not sure if he did or not. I can't answer that. I know that a number of groups, when they were federalized, of course, they were sent to Iraq, and that was in the pretext of a war. Now, that's definitely under his authority to do that, but I'm not exactly sure what the interplay is with something of a domestic nature like that. But I know there are going to be a lot of governors who are going to be pretty upset because they're going to need these assets for other problems in their own states.
Well, see, that's the thing. That's
a two-week rotation.
Jim, they're talking about rotating them from state to state, but the other part of the plan that I heard was that these guardsmen will be under the individualized control of the governors of the several border states.
Well, now, how can they take assets from the West Virginia National Guard and take them down there? Are they going to place them under the control of the governor of Texas?
Well, you've got some substantial experience marching around in military land. You tell me.
Well,
I'm not being facetious. I don't understand.
The only way they can do that is to federalize them, and, of course, then they will place these assets will become federal assets and not state assets, and that's how they're going to do that.
But they have said point blank that they're not going to federalize them, Jim.
And they probably will have to. But, you know, have you any idea of what the cost of that's going to be? I mean, even though they say, you know, the National Guard, they have to go in training every 2 weeks and stuff like that, that was used as an excuse for that. So they can do it during their annual military training. But, you know, their annual military training is not to do guard duty. It is to hone military skills and, you know, for as far as National Guard, Army, or Air Force or whatever, is to hone the skills that are relevant to their MOSs and AFSC, you know, their military jobs, right?
You're right.
And they're not there to stand guard on some border, and I think that...
Well, that's what I'm suggesting here, Jim. There's a terrible problem, among other things. There's a terrible problem in this whole miasma of with Posse Comitatus. Can you see where that would come into play?
You're talking about those right-wing people who live in the camps and stuff like that?
No, I'm talking about the Posse Comitatus Act.
That's what they're called now, the Posse Comitatus.
No, that's what they call themselves. No, there is a Posse Comitatus Act.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's federal law, and it speaks to the fact that you cannot use the American military for law enforcement purposes or military purposes on American soil.
Well, they've certainly done it before. I mean, what do you think they did when they federalized the National Guard in the Deep South during the race riots of the 60s?
But they
sit in civil affairs units and things like that because, I mean, basically your reserve and guard assets are involved in two functions. One is civil affairs and the other is transportation. Okay? They're round at you.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what they do. But, I mean, they certainly were sent down there by President Kennedy and Robert F. Kennedy to stabilize that situation in the South during the race riots. Did they not? Were they not? I mean, They were peacekeepers. They acted as policemen.
They acted as escort. Well, I mean, if you're talking about Arkansas and Alabama and the stand in the schoolhouse door and stuff, they acted as escorts. They weren't vested with law enforcement powers.
They may not have been invested with them, but I'll tell you one thing: they certainly had them they may not have had them de jure, but they certainly had them de facto.
But the bottom line of all of this, Jim, is that he's made himself a mess. That these people were supposed to be the real geniuses of government, and I don't necessarily know that they are. Well, I don't think they've begun to contemplate what it is they're doing here.
Well, how can they be the real geniuses of government when basically their whole position toward government has been to drown it in the bathtub? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I do.
How can they say that they're such geniuses in government, or how can they pretend as though they are when they themselves have tried to destroy it and degrade all of its assets, you know?
Well, don't you remember when they took office in 2001, Jim, and they said the grown-ups are back in charge? Remember that?
I tried to forget most of that, but yeah, I remember something about that. I mean, I thought to myself that was just pure idiocy, but nonetheless, it was just like, you know, more crap coming out of their mouths, just like Newt Gingrich contract with America, a contract on America in 1994. But these people are such enemies of government, but yet they use it for their own ends with such strong hands. And they wonder why they don't do so well in handling government, because they are enemies of government, and government doesn't really like them either too much, you know, the career people.
Yeah, and the other part of that, Jim, is the fact that in this particular instance, this, you know, mobilizing the National Guard on the border, blah, blah, this is a knee-jerk reaction. I mentioned it earlier. This was supposed to be a knee-jerk reaction that would pacify the real weirdo hard right wingers of the Republican Party and make them feel like George was finally doing something to close our borders.
It has achieved the exact opposite end. I think it's even made these people madder down there.
Oh, it did. It did. I mean, I read the news this morning, and it was all... Yeah, it was. It was pouring gasoline on a smoldering fire because all these weirdo right-winger Mexican haters were madder this morning than they were last night. I mean, Lou Dobbs on CNN, you know, oh, Mr. President missed a real opportunity to do something substantive, blah, blah, blah. You know, shut up, Lou, you know?
Well, you know, obviously you'd bear Lou Dobbs little, if any, affection. Sometimes he does make some sense. You got to give him credit for that now. He does make some sense sometimes. Unlike our local Mr. O'Brien this morning, and who has a caller called Dirty Bob, who calls him up every morning, first time. And he and Stevie got into it this morning about all this thing about how Bush, according to Dirty Bob, was losing 13% of his conservative base, and of course O'Brien was defending Mr. Bush to the very last end, and it was pretty pyrotechnical. As a matter of fact, a subsequent caller called up there and told him that he basically was just rude and shouted people down and treated them like they were 2 years old and was just a bully. I was so unhappy that you couldn't have heard it.
Well, you know,
Thank you so much to both of us.
Well, it's just kind of pathetic that Beckley has fallen back into the dark ages of having, you know, neither me nor Dr. Bill, no other perspective but that of, you know...
His own followers, and even though normally the people who would support all this stuff, what I'm saying is... definitely falling away and splitting apart of the Republican base that Bush has so long, has depended on. Because I think people are beginning to realize exactly what has happened in this country since the year 2000, since he took office, and it's not been real good. Or 2001, excuse me. And it's, you know, exactly what has happened in this country. I mean, under his watch, we had the terrorist attacks of September 11th. Under his watch, we've had so many millions and billions of trillions of dollars just thrown away, you know, money, just good money after bad, under false pretenses, lies, obfuscations, and things of that nature. And now we have, you know, disasters of our own, which we can't sustain and meet adequately, like Katrina. And, you know, and we're on another part of the world trying to correct their situation. We can't take care of our own people in New Orleans. And then you have this Border Patrol situation. And they're talking about Homeland Security making this place more secure when, you know, our borders are just about as porous as a loofah sponge, you know?
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, you've got all kinds of problems that have been going on in his administration with Tom DeLay and all these people. You know, the whole thing, basically, you talk about the Presbyterian minister being offended by someone having an odor. If he were to have that crowd together in his congregation, he'd have to have smelling salts to keep awake for his sermon. You know?
Well, yeah. But,
talk about stinking. I mean, this whole thing just stinks to high heaven, and I don't care how much renews it or whatever they try to cover it up with. I'm afraid it's beginning to smell worse and worse, even with the renews it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, interestingly, the same time period in which Clemens was writing when he made that remark about Reverend Talmadge, he was dealing with a political situation that is very similar to our own, because the Grant administration was nothing but pure unmitigated cronyism.
Well, there was a lot of graft and corruption under Grant's administration. That's for sure. It was, as a matter of fact, that's one of the remarkable things that people remember about it. And you know, Grant plus his daily or how many cigars he smoked and stuff like that. You're right, absolutely. But nonetheless, you know, these things are beginning to find their way, and people are beginning to see the light. I hope, and you know. It's just a matter of, it's a question of patience. He wins, who waits? And so whenever these guys really pull a boner and they really show themselves for what they are and show how inept they are in handling the reins of power and using the levers of government, then it proves to me exactly how wrong people were for putting them there in 2000 and 2004, you know?
Yeah, and look, it goes back. We've got to roll into the break, Jim. But it goes back further than that. It's how wrong, short-sighted, and naive people were to put them in power in 1994. These people never deserved to be in power.
I was not happy about that either. I'll tell you one story that happened to me, and this was strange. But I was in the Kroger a couple of months ago. And I had eaten something, and I had wind to pass, and I did very silently. And this woman just asked me right in front of everybody, "Did you fart?" And I said, "I certainly did. I don't always smell like this."
Oh, I got to get a snare drum someday. Thanks, Jim. Have a great evening, all right?
Cheers.
Bye now. Okay. So let's take a break. With that, how do you top that? You don't. When we come back, your phone calls, 877, the number 4 head on, 877-443-2366. Barring that, a little chat about Al Gore. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year. And a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with those scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Dog attacks and dog bites come in all sizes. Think your dog doesn't bite? Don't be so sure. Dog attacks are one of the nation's most commonly reported public health problems. Francia Smith, consumer advocate for the U.S. Postal Service.
With the summer heat and children out of school, the dog bite risk gets worse. But with a little care, dog owners can prevent most attacks and protect themselves too, from the serious legal, financial, and emotional consequences that often result. Over half the dog bite victims are children. Any dog can bite for the first time, even with the owner there. So whether you are a dog owner or not, please take the time to learn about dog safety. Visit USPS.com and type the words dog bite into the search box for the links you need. You'll be glad you did.
This message is provided as a public service by this station and the U.S. Postal Service.
Beginning, there was dirt, water, and air. And it was good. Once, Planet Check. Planet Check.
With gas prices skyrocketing at the pump, there is a cheap, renewable alternative fuel.
Rudolph Diesel actually designed the diesel engine to run on vegetable oil over 100 years ago.
A diesel engine that runs on used vegetable oil?
We get the used vegetable oil from fast food restaurants.
Bio-diesel. It's called biodiesel.
I got a biodiesel van.
Joshua Tickle, author of From the Fryer to the Fuel Tank, explains.
Biodiesel is a clean-burning diesel fuel that's actually made from vegetable oil. It's usable in any diesel engine. You don't have to modify the engine. You just pour biodiesel right into it.
Pour some veggie fuel into that tank.
The environmental benefits of biodiesel are that it's cleaner, it's healthy for humans, plants, and animals.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
South is, and how to tell his wife.
You know, if you've ever heard that wonderful album from a few years back, the Crash Test Dummies, you really do owe it to yourself to listen to it. Some of the smartest lyrics that have been penned in a long, long time. Now, Al Gore. Fascinating story. Let me get it going here. This from Raw Story regarding an appearance that Al made apparently yesterday or so. The story from Raw is dated. The Raw Story. This is getting confusing. Is dated today. But it refers to an event, quote-unquote, yesterday, so I assume that that's Monday. Former Vice President Al Gore gave yet another vague hint yesterday in Atlanta that he might be open to a run for the presidency in 2008. Gore told a reporter for the Atlanta Progressive News, a nascent politics site. He called himself, quote-unquote, a recovering politician. He said, he also added, quote, you always have to worry about a relapse. This was during the screening of An Inconvenient Truth in Atlanta. You know, the movie that's got all the right-wing nuts who haven't even seen it yet all up in arms. Al Gore's trying to scare the world to death. So they screened the film, and somewhere along the way, the editor of the Progressive News site asked the man who should be President Gore, we can go into that one if you want to, quote, will you please, please run for president? To which Gore responded, I'm a recovering politician. on step 9. Thank you for your sentiment. And they went on, another person said, you know, it's not a sentiment. We want you to run. He said, like I said, I'm a recovering politician, but you always have to worry about a relapse. Now, what I found interesting, and, you know, I don't know if Al Gore knows what the 12 steps are. I mean, it started out with Alcoholics Anonymous, and then it moved into drugs, and it's gone on, you know, Twinkies Anonymous, and everybody's got 12 steps now. The point where there's a Simpsons episode where I think Homer's in, like donuts or, you know, Duff Beer Anonymous or something, and he says, those donuts look good. I wonder how far away they are. And somebody says 12 steps, and he says, too far. But he said, I'm on step 9. Now, that kind of inspired me, made me curious. Wanted to go and look up the 12 steps. Because Al Gore says he's on step 9. And I thought we would run through the steps that Al Gore... Was that just a smart-ass comment? I don't know. But when I went back and I looked at the 12 steps, things made a lot more sense to me. Step 1... We admitted we were powerless over fill in the blank, alcohol, drugs, sex, gambling, Twinkies, that our lives had become unmanageable. So let's read this as since Al Gore says he's a recovering politician, let's read this as we might expect Al Gore to read it in Politicians Anonymous. We admitted we were powerless over politics, that our lives had become unmanageable. Step 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him or it. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him or it to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Now, if you're just being flippant, you know, I'm on step 6. Or 7. Or 11 or 12. Do you see what I'm getting at? Step 9 is... Step 9 is kind of profound. Because in the 12-step world, they will tell you when you get to step 9, that is when you step out of the inquiry that's going on the interior, and you start taking it outside. And you start making it an active part of your daily life as you interact with others. Admitted, believed, made a decision, searching, admitted to God, entirely ready, humbly asked God, made a list, made direct, and then 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And I know that the progressives and the liberals I don't know how to describe. There's a lot of people who have a lot of bad feelings aimed at Al Gore. I particularly, among them, would like to, you know, one of these days, you know, I build that time machine, all hell's going to bust loose. Because Al Gore's going to come out in the 2000 election cycle and he's going to actually fight George Bush instead of thinking of him as that idiot that no one would possibly vote for. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. I think he chose step 9 for a reason. Because I think that's what's going on now. That speech in Washington, D.C., that just blistered the hide off of that ugly little pig-eyed, jug-eared lout in the White House. That was a making of amends. And I don't see any... Those were direct amends, Sunshine. That was a making of amends. This film is a making of amends. I think Al Gore understands now that he got sucked way too far into the Democratic Leadership Council. And he got his ass triangulated. Quite possibly by the great triangulator. I don't know. Figure it out. Is it just... Is this just the ravings of my goofy paranoid mind? Or does this make some kind of sense? Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. I think in a way, and maybe we'll listen to it, I don't know. I think in a way what he did opening up the cold opening to Saturday Night Live this past weekend was part of those amends. Now the question is, are the people who sat there in 2000 and said, well, you know, there's really no difference between Al Gore and George Bush, and therefore I am going to vote for fill in the blank. Do they have enough stomach? Do they have enough fortitude? Do they have enough courage? Do they have enough guts now to recognize that they got used like it? Well, okay, not going to get graphic. Do they have that kind of fortitude? Because you know what? I'm going to tell you something right now. I like Russ Feingold a lot. If he chooses to run for the presidency of the United States, I wish him very well. But I'm enough of a realist to recognize that he ain't going to get elected. He ain't going to get nominated. If he gets nominated, he'll get stomped. Because every member of every church in the Deep South will run out and go, look at that, a Christ killer is running for president. You know, the Jews killed Christ. It will happen. It happened to Joe Lieberman. You know, it's the only bright spot of Gore not being president is Joe Lieberman not being vice president. But do you see what I'm getting at? I think Al Gore is making amends, and I think we had better listen to him as he does. Because liberals, progressives, friends, Al Gore may be the only thing that stands between us and 2008 presidential nominee Hillary Clinton and the gut stomping that the Democratic Party will take again if they nominate her. Simply put. So that's the first hour tonight. Let's do another one after the news. What do you say? I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is a Herculean little effort we're so proud to make and that we call the Head On Radio Network.
We'll be right back. Head-On Radio News. I'm Bruce Birch. Not kowtowing to the extremist right, the U.S. Senate decided today to tackle immigration issues such as citizenship before making decisions related to securing the southern U.S. border. The vote was 55-40 against a proposal by Senator Johnny Isaacson, Republican of Georgia, who said that anything less than a border security first approach amounted to a, quote, wink and a nod one more time to those who would come here, end quote. Former President Bill Clinton was in Canada yesterday at a meeting of the World Leaders Forum. While speaking at the inaugural meeting of the forum, Clinton admonished Canadians to hang on to their health care system, saying that the U.S. system is a, quote, colossal waste of money, end quote, that is killing his country competitively. Former President Clinton pointed out that the portion of health costs spent on administration in the United States is nearly twice that of any other industrialized nation. He noted that health costs for American automakers are up to 15 times their Japanese counterparts, even if all the manufacturing is being done in the United States. A former counterterrorism chief at the CIA, Vincent Canestraro, told the New York Sun that FBI sources have confirmed to him that reporters' calls are being tracked as part of the probe, writes the Sun's Josh Gerstein in Tuesday papers. Mr. Canestraro, who has worked as a consultant for ABC, said, quote, the FBI is monitoring calls of a number of news organizations as part of this leak investigation. It is widespread, and it may entail more than those three media outlets, end quote. Under longstanding Justice Department regulations, prosecutors who subpoena a journalist's phone records are required to notify the reporter involved within 90 days of obtaining the records. The regulations state that in most cases, subpoenas should not be issued until after an attempt is made to negotiate access with the reporter. In the game of denying who is at fault, George Bush and Bell South both denied any involvement in the NSA domestic spying scandal. Bush said, quote, we do not listen to domestic phone calls without court approval, end quote. Bush did appear to acknowledge the NSA sweep of phone records indirectly, saying that the program referred to by a reporter in a question, quote, is one that has been fully briefed to members of the United States Congress in both political parties, end quote. For its part in the scandal, Bell South Corporation said Monday its thorough review found no indication it gave telephone records to the National Security Agency as part of a federal anti-terrorism surveillance program. Bell South released the statement, quote, based on our review to date, we have confirmed no such contract exists and have not provided bulk customer calling records to the NSA, end quote. This is News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
You know why your head swivels on your neck? So you can share the road with motorcycles. Watch for bikes when you drive and help make this a safe riding season. A message from this station in the AMA. On the web at amadirectlink.com.
Tony Snow, the administration's new press secretary, got off to a great start today, referring to the NSA spying scandal as a tar baby. The story of the tar baby first came into popular American culture through Joel Chandler Harris's Uncle Remus stories. In the popular version, the character of Br'er Rabbit encounters a baby made of tar on the street. When the black, sticky dummy doesn't respond to him, he strikes it repeatedly, becoming stuck to it. In his preface to the book, Harris wrote, quote, I trust I have been successful in presenting what must be, at least to a large portion of American readers, a new and by no means unattractive phase of Negro character, a phase which may be considered a curiously sympathetic supplement to Mrs. Stowe's wonderful defense of slavery as it existed in the South. 21 locals of the United Auto Workers Union voted overwhelmingly to authorize a strike should Delphi Corporation unilaterally impose changes to its labor agreements. Over 95% of the votes cast authorized the UAW to call a strike. The union's vote is response to the Troy-based auto supplier's request to U.S. bankruptcy judge Robert Drain last week to nullify labor contracts and eliminate retiree medical and life insurance benefits. The approval was expected but does not mean a strike is certain. Both sides are awaiting Drain's decision, which is not expected until June at the earliest. With $900 million in its strike fund, the UAW could afford a strike of significant length. The union currently offers $200 for a full week on strike, or $40 a day for less than a full week. Striking workers also would receive UAW health insurance that would start when Delphi cuts those benefits. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Arlen Specter toned down his rhetoric about the NSA domestic spying today. Instead of seeking to have the FISA court issue a ruling on whether or not the domestic spying is illegal, he has instead agreed to allow the administration to retain an important legal defense by allowing the court, which holds its hearings in secret, to review the program only by hearing a challenge from a plaintiff with legal standing, said a person familiar with the text of language agreed to by Specter and committee conservatives. An expert in constitutional law and national security, however, said that the change would allow the administration to throw up huge obstacles to anyone seeking to challenge the program's legality. For the Head-On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head-On with Bob Kincaid.
Well, have I lost my tiny mind? Is it possible that there was something cryptic in Al Gore's choice of step 9? The making of amends? And the greater question for those dedicated progressives and liberals, you know, I consider myself one. Will you make amends with Al Gore if it means the out of the White House? This isn't, now understand, this isn't a sexist thing. No gender thing at all. It's a political thing. I want somebody who understands that this damn dirty, stinking, filthy war must end. And we mustn't run around starting anymore. I think it's fairly simple. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Andrew is calling from New York. Hey, Andrew, you're Head-On.
How you doing?
Doing okay, you?
Doing all right. Al Gore. I think I made peace with Al Gore back a few months ago, when he made that speech. And when he was in, I think he was talking with Move On. When he made that big speech there. And that's when I made my peace with Al Gore. And I think with the old Saturday Night Live deal, I think that was pretty good. So he should have been our president. I think this country would have been, you know, miles and miles beyond, you know, miles and miles ahead. We would have progressed so far if we had Al Gore as our president. And
some of that stuff in the Saturday Night Live skit, and we've got the audio here, was funny.
Oh yeah,
but there was a hell of a lot of it that was true.
Yes. Yes, it was. And, you know, that's, you know, the greatest truth has been told in jest. And I was laughing, but I was still crying at the same time because I was like, oh, man, if we could have had him as our president, we wouldn't be in the predicament we're in right now, I don't think.
Well, some of that hit me today, Andrew, because I was watching the Al Gore clip, and then I walked in, and there's CNN showing the released footage of whatever it was, the lone gunman or whatever, hitting the Pentagon. I'm sorry, I used to take a lot of grief from the weirdo right wing nuts for it, but I honestly do not believe that 9/11 would be anything more than a distress call or the name of a really cool German automobile.
That's about it.
To this day, if Al Gore had been allowed to take the White House.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, they're talking about the releasing this, you know, Pentagon tapes and, you know, it's been doctored or whatever. But, you know, most pilots, if you talk to a pilot, I mean, trying to bring in an airliner at that low a level, I mean, it's not going to make it. I mean, it's hard to control.
Well, that's like a carrier. That's like a carrier landing for a 757 or something.
It would have wiped out before it even got to the Pentagon. You know, so I mean, come on. I mean, that's all. But I'm not going there.
I understand. You know, and the same thing applies to Lee Harvey Oswald. I don't know how much dumb luck plays in some of this, Andrew.
Yeah. Well.
You know, if you believe that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone, then at the very least he got really lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. And I even tried. You know, because I like to play with aircraft simulators and stuff like that, and I tried to do it in an old P-51 Mustang, and I couldn't even do it to fly that long. You know, and that's on a computer. You know?
Yeah, I used to have one where I flew American World War II era torpedo planes in the South Pacific campaign, and because those things had to fly at literally 50 feet off the water to make the torpedoes engage.
Yeah, and it's hard to control it. You know,
mostly I crashed.
Yeah, you can. I mean, it's just, you know, physically it's not possible, but. Let's not go there. But as far as Al Gore, I would love to see Al Gore run for president. I think that would be great, you know? Better than Hillary, because Hillary, first of all, she's a woman. And second of all, she has too many political enemies. And, you know, Hillary, no. This country's not really
well,
a woman president, first of all. And we can't even get past racism, you know, let alone...
Right.
Having a woman, even if she's qualified, to be president of the United States is just not going to happen. You know, so that's just lunacy, if you ask me, if the Democrats put her up for president.
But she loses.
Not to say that she hasn't done good things and everything like that, but...
Well, even Rupert Murdoch says she's an excellent senator for New York State.
Well, somewhat, but, you know, it's just, you know, look at her voting record. That's all I have to say. But the whole NSA deal, how these companies now are saying, well, we're going to take the Quest defense now. You know, that's basically what they're doing. We're going to say, well, we cooperate with government. Now they're recanting. You know, saying we didn't, you know. And I'm like, it makes you wonder why Quest had the, you know, the brassies to stand up against the NSA and the government, you know.
Well, I think I've got it figured out, Andrew.
Yeah.
No, really, and for true. Do you remember when the story came out a couple of months ago by the guy who had filed suit in San Francisco against AT&T or whatever it was, and said that the NSA had their own little setup down in a corner of the AT&T office building, and they were doing it all themselves?
Yes, I briefly remember that. Yes. And it's...
Well, there's the weasel room that Bell South and Verizon need.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't turn over any records.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So basically, if Bell South and Verizon had the same deal with the NSA that AT&T in San Francisco did, technically they didn't turn over any records.
Yeah, because
the NSA acquired them for themselves.
Exactly. So, you know, it is what it is. You know, they've been doing it all along, and you know, it came out, but apparently. It's not that big of a deal with the American public, you know. So, hey.
Yeah, it kind of depends on which poll you see.
Huh? Yeah, it all depends.
Kind of depends on which poll you look at.
Yeah, you know. And I don't, you know, I talk to people and, you know, I wait for them to bring it up, and a lot of people don't even bring it up. So, I just say, hey, lose a little.
Well, I'm,
your
I'm,
problem, you know? Hey?
I think more and more is going to come out about it.
Mm-hmm.
You got to remember, the Watergate break-in was a cheap little penny-ante piece of burglary.
Oh, yeah.
That nobody wanted to take a look at. Nobody wanted to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But...
Until it began to become obvious that the Nixon administration was actually engaged in something that amounted to a deliberate subversion of the Constitution of the United States.
Yeah.
Then suddenly the American people got interested.
Yeah. And this is, you know, that's what... The Bush administration is, you know, that's their trade. They love, you know, undermining the Constitution. That's their stock and trade, you know. They love it.
Well, I looked at my dad earlier today, Andrew, and I said, because they were showing something about Nixon, and I said, how bad is it when I look up and go, you know, on the grand, in the grand scheme of things, I guess he wasn't so bad after all.
Exactly.
Yeah, that just makes you want to run your head through the drywall.
Exactly. That makes you want to say, good Lord, where are we? You know? What is going on? I mean, to the point where Americans aren't outraged about this, and I know it's, you know, the media is in, you know, the Bush goes pocket, but still, I mean, there are things that get out in the news. So apparently people just, you know, some people just don't give a damn, you know? I know.
Well, you know, I mean,
really lied,
that one dude did take quite the screwing in American Idol last week. A lot of America's probably not quite over that yet.
Sydney? Yeah, that was bad. Even though I can't watch American Idol.
I mean, Paula Abdul cried.
Can't watch American Idol, but I would love to see Al Gore run in 2008. But I would really love it if the Democrats could take back at least one branch of Congress in 2006. In the midterms.
You know, I think the Republicans are even to the point where they're sort of stealing themselves for it. That's why you're seeing these god-awful tax break bills and everything go through. They're trying to pile up enough stuff that a Democratic Congress won't have time to tear it all down before the next go-round.
Exactly. They're just gorging themselves. They're just, like, hoarding everything they can get right now. But and as far as Tony Snow's comments...
Oh, he cried today.
He kind of tarred and feathered himself with that one, didn't he? I mean, come on, dude. I mean, you're going to get up in front of him and say, this is the tar baby, the NSA spying skin. I'm not going to touch that tar baby. I'm like, when I heard that, I was just like, oh, God, you just didn't lay out for the American public what you really are. And
yeah, he kind of did. I mean, why not, you know. Why not just sit down with a jug of moonshine and whip out the old copy of Uncle Remus and get to reading?
Basically.
You know, the unexpurgated version where we still use the other word in front of tar baby.
And then he's going to...
No, And then the crying about, ooh, I had cancer. God, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Oh, please. I mean, it's amazing. But he's just a laughing stock anyway. But that's all I wanted to call up and say. So you have a...
Well, thank you, Andrew. I do appreciate it. It's so good to hear from you.
Yes, nice to talk to you. And
right.
Jim, I love hearing Jim on the phone because he has so much wisdom, and I love hearing him and his comments. So to Jim...
Well, I'm sure that'll tickle him to hear that.
Yes. All righty. So have
all right.
A
nice... Take care, Andrew.
All right, you too.
Have a great night.
You too.
Bye now. And we'll take a quick break and come back. Yeah, Tony Snow. broke down and you know, he did, you know, there was the tar baby comment, and then he starts tearing up, and it's, I'm having my Edmund Muskie moment. Yes. Fuck it. We'll come right back. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is the Head On Radio Network.
Survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. When I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper, and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Planet Check. Planet Check.
He's the granola Ayatollah of canola.
Charles Ford, founder of Grasoline Solutions, explains.
I just started writing rhymes while I was farming and doing the eco thing, so that's kind of how this all came about.
Ford spits the truth.
Now, Rudolph Diesel was no weasel, this we know to be true. He was an engineer and a humanitarian, too. He made it possible for us to drive on vegetable fuel. Nobody told you that, well, that's what I'm trying to do. It was back around the turn of last century when Dr. Diesel offered up this opportunity. Corn, soy, chicken, fat, some flour, flax, hemp. Seed. Farmers could grow their own fuel, not only their feed. Small towns could be self-sufficient about their energy needs without drilling or spilling or paying a fee. It's like that.
Biodiesel reduces cancer-causing emissions by 75%. For more EcoWrap and all the 411 on biodiesel,
Grasoline.com. Check us out.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Interesting bump of music. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. Tuesday evening. Hope yours is going as well as mine is. It's a lovely little evening here in the last little toe hills of the Appalachians in northwest Alabama. And I've been doing, we all know kind of what I'm doing down here. I've engaged in some very unenvironmental practices, I have to admit. I've been walking it. I caught poison ivy trying to grow around the corner of the house. And I lose my mind when I see poison ivy. So I went out and got some Weed Be Gone by Ortho and sprayed it around, and I feel terrible for it. But I will kill the damn poison ivy. Yeah. Lucky for me, it appears that I'm not allergic to it. But that doesn't say the kids aren't, and they're going to be down here at some point soon, I hope. And there's some weeds down. See, the city of Florence has a right-of-way behind the house that they took, and they won't maintain. And there's this whole little jungle down there. And I've hosed that stuff down with poison, and there's some weeds down there that go, yeah, bring on another shot of that. That was good. The business, I don't know, have you all heard it? I know my good friend Bruce Birch ran it the other night, but I think it's worth running again. I'd like for you to hear the cold opening from Saturday Night Live this past Saturday night with Al Gore. It shows that he has a real sense for looking back and at least trying to laugh at his own foibles. And I think this is part of step 9, if you want to get right down to it. This is part of making amends. Agnes, hit it, please.
overwhelmingly made the decision to elect me as your 43rd president. I knew the road ahead would be difficult. We have accomplished so much, yet challenges lie ahead. In the last 6 years, we have been able to stop global warming. No one could have predicted the negative results of this. Glaciers that once were melting are now on the attack. As you know, these renegade glaciers have already captured parts of Upper Michigan and Northern Maine, but I assure you, we will not let the glaciers win. Right now, in the second week of May 2006, we are facing perhaps the worst gas crisis in history. We have way too much gasoline. Gas is down to 19 cents a gallon, and the oil companies are hurting. I know that I am partly to blame by insisting that cars run on trash. I am therefore proposing a federal bailout to our oil companies because, hey, if it were the other way around, you know the oil companies would help us. We worked hard to save welfare, fix Social Security, and, of course, provide the free universal health care we all enjoy today. But all this came at a high cost. As I speak, the gigantic national budget surplus is down to a perilously low $11 trillion. And don't get any ideas. That money is staying in the very successful lockbox. We're not touching it. Of course, we could give economic aid to China or lend money to the Saudis again. But right now, we're already so loved by everyone in the world that American tourists can't even go over to Europe anymore without getting hugged. There are some of you who would like to spend our money on some made-up war. To you, I say, what part of lockbox don't you understand? What if there's a hurricane or a tornado? Unlikely, I know, because of the anti-hurricane and tornado machine I was instrumental in helping develop. But what if? What if the scientists are right and one of those giant glaciers hits Boston? That's why we have the lockbox. As for immigration, solving that came at a heavy cost, and I personally regret the loss of California. However, the new Mexifornian economy is strong, and El Presidente Schwarzenegger is doing a great job. There have been some setbacks. Unfortunately, the confirmation process for Supreme Court Justice Michael Moore was bitter and divisive. However, I could not be more proud of how the House and Senate pulled together to confirm the nomination of Chief Justice George Clooney. Baseball, our national pastime, still lies under the shadow of steroid accusations. But I have faith in Baseball Commissioner George W. Bush when he says, we will find the steroid users if we have to tap every phone in America. In 2001, when I came into office, our national security was the most important issue. The threat of terrorism was real. Who knew that 6 years later, Afghanistan would be the most popular spring break destination, or that Six Flags Tehran is the fastest growing amusement park in the Middle East? And the scariest thing we Americans have to fear is live from New York, it's Saturday night.
You know, that's a great bit. That's funny. It's also sad. Because, you know, okay, the tornado machine. You know, that's the business with the filthy little lies that the American media went along with about him claiming that he, oh, pick one, invented the internet, was the basis for Love Story. They had to drain a lake to let him go whitewater rafting. All that stupidity. But there's a lot of truth in there, too. How many $1 trillion was there in the surplus when George Bush got hold of it? Oh, and there's a rule of thumb for you. Never give a drunk a multi-trillion-dollar surplus. Ouch. Ouch. Can you imagine a world where 9/11's a distress call or a really cool German automobile and that's it? where we talk about, well, you know, they got close, but they didn't pull it off because, you know, we've got competent people in charge. Where the New York skyline is still dominated by those two twin towers and Building 7 hasn't committed suicide. Jesus, it's almost like a John Lennon song, isn't it? Imagine. Sandra Day O'Connor, William Rehnquist turning on a spit in hell somewhere. Scalia. Kennedy. Thomas. You bastards. You inestimable bastards. For what you did to this country. We're going to take a break. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's a Cup of Joe report. I'm Joe Vecchio. There are only two weapons that we working people have at our disposal to fight against corporate power. One of them is unity. When working people stick together, we have more power than any force in the world. Ayn Rand wanted us to believe that just a few special people make the world run. But if all the working people decided that enough is enough, and they would just stop going to work because they felt like they weren't getting paid or treated as they deserved, then no corporation in the world would ever see a penny in profit. The only reason we don't just walk away is because we still have rent and bills to pay and families to feed. And the powers that be, knowing this, want to do everything they can to make sure it stays that way, because a hungry worker is a powerless worker. What happened in the mines of West Virginia is a perfect example of what happens when corporate power and profits are placed above the rights and safety of working people. Those 12 miners were killed because the mining company felt that the expense of keeping the mine safe was more important than the lives of their employees. It would be easy to say that the company murdered them with the help of an administration who places property rights over the rights of humans, but that's not the entire truth. Because we have allowed ourselves to believe in the lie of rugged individualism, we turn against each other, treating anyone who complains about working conditions as a whiner. In other words, shut up and be happy you have a job. The government and the company manufactured the gun, but we took it into our hands and pulled the trigger. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
I didn't mean to catch my dear Agnes flat-footed. I'll be honest with you. I got to thinking about an America without Bush. I got to thinking about an America without Osama. I got to thinking about an America without Michael Chertoff. I got to thinking about an America without a Department of Homeland Security. I got to thinking about an America without Brownie. I got to thinking about an America without Michael Hayden. I got to thinking about an America without Condi, an America without Cheney, an America without Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, Pearl. And I pulled Tony Snow. I teared up. And I apologize. Because when I think of an America without those bastards, that is the America that I want to live in. That is the reality that I want America to be. When I think what could have happened had those five evil, hateful, nasty, vile, venomous members of the United States Supreme Court not stolen our votes from us in 2000. Oh, I know, you can't live in the past and you can't cry over spilled milk. I understand that. But, you know, a few weeks ago I took my young son to get on the plane for his first plane ride, and stupid me, I'm a smoker. And forgot to empty, you know, I took out the pocket knife, but I forgot to take out the lighter. I lost a perfectly good Bic lighter walking my son to the plane because George Bush is an incompetent boob who, when handed on August the 6th, a presidential daily briefing entitled Osama Determined to Strike Inside U.S., looked at Condi and said, "What the hell is this?" And said, "Oh, don't worry, Mr. President, it's a historical document." Screw them! I want there to be, okay? There are moments that I want there to be a real, live, honest-to-God, you know, great big universe-sized charcoal briquette smoldering away at burning hell. Because I want the kind of faith where I can be sure in my faith and faith rising to a level of knowledge that when the time comes, George Bush, Condi Rice, Colin Powell, Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, Tony Snow, Scotty McClellan, Ari Fleischer will all be roasting away there. I want it real, and I want it just for them. And, you know, I mean, I know, that irritates some people when I do that. But again, I'm in good company. God, what century was it when Dante Alighieri wrote La Divina Commedia? And the Inferno. Because he had his own little list of his Italian contemporaries that he was quite certain he wanted to be in a burning hell. And they hadn't even allowed anybody to fly a plane into buildings. 3,000 people hadn't died as the direct and proximate result of the ignorance, stupidity, and hatefulness, and short-sightedness, and loutishness. Of just a handful of people. Do you remember that America? Do you remember the America we lived in before George Bush ignored 3,000 people to death? Do you remember that America? This is 2006, 5 years. On September 11, 2006, 5 years will have passed since George W. Bush ignored his way into the history books. 5 years have already passed since five old sorry sons and daughter of the syphilitic sea cooks decided that politics were more important than the Constitution of the United States and put that hateful gang into office. 5 years. 5 years have passed. And with every passing day, the light grows dimmer on the America that existed before September 11th. Before we got handed speeches by people like Rumsfeld saying, you know, well, we're not going to call it the war on terror anymore. It's the long war. Hell, it's the endless war. It's the war that will bring America to her knees. Because an America without her Bill of Rights is, well, that just, the great democratic experiment is over. Do you remember an America where you didn't even, you know, you wanted to call the Aunt Ethel in Pocatello, and you picked up the phone and you called Aunt Ethel in Pocatello, and she, you know, yeah, okay, you got it, and you know, when it's sat out for a couple of days, then you pour the brandy on the fruitcake, and you never once thought that there was some anti-American little bastard sitting down in the bowels of the National Security Agency. Trolling across your phone calls. Wasting your taxpayer dollars. Databasing your call to Aunt Ethel. Do you remember that America? For me, looking backwards, it's beginning to take on that kind of sepia-toned look that you get in photographs of times that were precious, and more importantly, times that are gone forever. And so, some of that informed me as I watched the Al Gore clip. Sure, we did evil, hateful, nasty things under Bill Clinton and Al Gore. We bombed Serbian people laying in their beds asleep. We killed children. We radiated the living hell out of the former Yugoslavia with depleted uranium weapons. And we maintained the sanctions on Iraq that made sure that a million children died for want of food and medicine. We did that. Yes, 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 yes. And it was evil. God Almighty, it was evil. But it was sort of a low-rent Bazooka Joe comics kind of evil compared to the evil that's been manifested by these, oh God, these monsters, these misanthropic freaks of nature that were foisted on us in December of 2000 by five old people who have forgotten what the very meaning of life is. And I mean life as in day-to-day, not the grand, you know, scheme, you know, 42. No, life, the day-to-day business of America and the world. It's forgotten. It's gone. And I chuckled. It's still funny. It was a funny bit that Gore did. It was a funny bit. But please never forget that, what is it? What is it Robert Heinlein said? Man is the only animal that bares its teeth to show pleasure. People who hear laughing and crying and don't get to see the funniest visual joke in the world is the pratfall. And there was real pain in what Al Gore did Saturday night. And I feel pain for him. But Lord God, Billy Bob, the pain I feel for us, the pain I feel for the American people, the pain I feel for the division that has been caused in this nation by people whose very essence and very definition is that of dividing people, and I mean Republicans. God, it hurts. It is physically painful. My gut is churning. And I didn't... this is just where it took me. I mean, I'm sorry. But what... I mean, do you remember... What do you remember? That's the question. What do you remember? Because we have to remember what America was before we can make America America again. And I mean politically, and I mean socially, and I mean culturally. What has to happen when we when we take back the House, when we take back the Senate, when we make sure that that neither Jeb nor Rudy nor John nor Hillary can have the White House in 2008? What is the America we want to go back to? What did it look like? What did it sound like? What was in it? Do you remember? If you do, please share it with me. Share it with us. Because only by remembering can we start to rebuild. The phone number you know. Share your memories. 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. Agnes is there at the phone. I'd like to hear your thoughts. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
She came down from Cincinnati. It took her 3 days on a train. Looking for some peace and quiet. Hope to see the sun again. But now she lives down by the ocean. She's taking care to look for sharks.
Hi, I'm Linda Ellerbee. Did you know that every 3 minutes another woman gets the news she has breast cancer? I got it 11 years ago, and I know how scary it can be. Everything your doctor says sounds like a foreign language. HER2-NU, oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Please listen. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options, and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. The first place to go the minute you find you have breast cancer. Breastcancer.org.
Hello, may I help you?
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Who is gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It was not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing, it's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Hey, John, I just heard you got a new computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's the coolest thing.
What'll you do with your old computer?
I don't know. I guess I'll just throw it away.
Well, my company just bought new computers, and we decided to donate the old PCs to a place that gives them to local schools. You could do something like that.
Seriously, who would want a 3-year-old computer?
Hey, it might be great for someone else. Computers can be refurbished and reused instead of ending up in the trash. By passing it on, you can help the community and the environment.
If you're replacing your company's IT equipment, or you're finished using your personal computer, pass it on to a local organization that accepts computers. To learn more, log on to epa.gov/pass it on. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dell, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into eCycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. For information on all partners, log on to epa.gov/plug-in.
No fighting. Shakira, Shakira.
I never really knew that she could dance like this. She make a man wanna speak Spanish. Como se llama?
Okay, we're back. Let me start this. Let me start some of the remembering of an America without a Bush, without a Bush administration. Because it's something that's near and dear to my heart. And it was I'm reminded of it because of a little press release that I got. During the 8 years of the Clinton administration, there was a rule in place. Oh, hell, there were a bunch of rules in place. There were 750 laws in place that were actually obeyed. In particular, we had, we had rules about arsenic in drinking water, but that got clarified. We had rules about crap being pumped into the air, but it got clarified. We've had about as much clarification out of this crowd in the White House as that we can possibly stand. The Army Corps of Engineers had rules from something called the Clean Water Act that said you can't just go throwing crap into stream beds and fill it up and pollute it and kill every living thing around it for miles and miles and miles and choke off the streams that feed the littler rivers, that feed the bigger rivers, that feed the father of rivers. Can't do that. That got clarified. To say that, rock and dirt, dumping those into streams and covering up, that's not pollution. That's just rock and dirt, and, you can put rock and dirt in a stream. I'm reminded of this because of what some of my good friends did today. Over in Richmond, Virginia, at the Jefferson Hotel. There's some irony for you. A bunch of my friends and some folks I don't even know rallied outside the Jefferson Hotel where Massey Energy was holding its annual stockholders meeting. They were, of course, protesting what Massey does best or worst, depending on how you define things. Or clarify them, God knows. What Massey does best or worst is, of course, blowing up mountains. While I've been down here in Alabama, I've been trying to tell more and more people about mountain range removal. Because, you see, it's the southeastern United States that yearns, craves the energy that is obtained by coal-fired power plants that burn the coal that is retrieved by taking down entire mountain ranges in West Virginia.
in Virginia, and Kentucky, and parts of Tennessee. We didn't have nearly as much of that before those five hateful, lifeless, soulless old freaks on the Supreme Court told George Bush that they wanted him to be president more than they loved their country. We didn't have nearly as much of that. It was kept, at least to a certain degree, in check. So today, my good friends from Coal River Mountain Watch and Mountain Justice, among others, protested outside the shareholders' meeting in Richmond, Virginia, of Massey Energy. And if you're a reader of National Geographic or Vanity Fair, Orion, the American School Board Journal, mountain range removal has been prominently featured in all of those things recently. 3 million pounds of explosives per day used on the mountains of West Virginia because people, well, you know, in the southeastern United States can't live with only one flat-screen TV or turn the computer off at night. And by the way, for those of you further west of me, one of the principal financial agents that enables this hellish practice is Wells Fargo Bank. If you hate what is being done to our mountains, to your mountains, and you should happen to do business with Wells Fargo Bank, your checking accounts there, your passbook savings accounts, you got a CD, whatever, as soon as you can possibly do it, do us all a favor. Do the Appalachians a favor and quit doing business with Wells Fargo Bank and tell them why, please. I don't give orders. I'm asking a favor. I remember a lot less destroyed mountains in West Virginia, and a lot less choked streams, and a lot more nature, and a lot less moonscape. Remember it well. We've got another hour to do. You're welcome to chime right in. I would like to know what kind of America you remember before Bush. Feel free to share your thoughts, 877-443-2366, 877, the number 4, head on. Email, by the way, is easy too, bob@headonradio.com. Let's check out the news and get back and do an hour or so of your thoughts and maybe even your solutions for how we get that America back. Again. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. Not kowtowing to the extremist right, the U.S. Senate decided today to tackle immigration issues such as citizenship before making decisions related to securing the southern U.S. border. The vote was 55-40 against a proposal by Senator Johnny Isaacson, Republican of Georgia, who said that anything less than a border security first approach amounted to a, quote, wink and a nod one more time to those who would come here, end quote. Former President Bill Clinton was in Canada yesterday at a meeting of the World Leaders Forum. While speaking at the inaugural meeting of the forum, Clinton admonished Canadians to hang on to their health care system, saying that the U.S. system is a, quote, colossal waste of money, end quote, that is killing his country competitively. Former President Clinton pointed out that the portion of health costs spent on administration in the United States is nearly twice that of any other industrialized nation. He noted that health costs for American automakers are up to 15 times their Japanese counterparts, even if all the manufacturing is being done in the United States. A former counterterrorism chief at the CIA, Vincent Canestraro, told the New York Sun that FBI sources have confirmed to him that reporters' calls are being tracked as part of the probe, writes the Sun's Josh Gerstein in Tuesday papers. Mr. Canestraro, who has worked as a consultant for ABC, said, quote, the FBI is monitoring calls of a number of news organizations as part of this leak investigation. It is widespread, and it may entail more than those three media outlets, end quote. Under longstanding Justice Department regulations, prosecutors who subpoena a journalist's phone records are required to notify the reporter involved within 90 days of obtaining the records. The regulations state that in most cases, subpoenas should not be issued until after an attempt is made to negotiate access with the reporter. In the game of denying who is at fault, George Bush and Bell South both denied any involvement in the NSA domestic spying scandal. Bush said, quote, we do not listen to domestic phone calls without court approval, end quote. Bush did appear to acknowledge the NSA sweep of phone records indirectly, saying that the program referred to by a reporter in a question, quote, is one that has been fully briefed to members of the United States Congress in both political parties, end quote. For its part in the scandal, Bell South Corporation said Monday its thorough review found no indication it gave telephone records to the National Security Agency as part of a federal anti-terrorism surveillance program. Bell South released the statement, quote, based on our review to date, we have confirmed no such contract exists and have not provided bulk customer calling records to the NSA, end quote. This is News on the Horn, the head-on radio network.
You know why your head swivels on your neck? So you can share the road with motorcycles. Watch for bikes when you drive and help make this a safe riding season. A message from this station in the AMA. On the web at amadirectlink.com.
Tony Snow, the administration's new press secretary, got off to a great start today, referring to the NSA spying scandal as a tar baby. The story of the tar baby first came into popular American culture through Joel Chandler Harris's Uncle Remus stories. In the popular version, the character of Br'er Rabbit encounters a baby made of tar on the street. When the black, sticky dummy doesn't respond to him, he strikes it repeatedly, becoming stuck to it. In his preface to the book, Harris wrote, quote, I trust I have been successful in presenting what must be, at least to a large portion of American readers, a new and by no means unattractive phase of Negro character, a phase which may be considered a curiously sympathetic supplement to Mrs. Stowe's wonderful defense of slavery as it existed in the South. 21 locals of the United Auto Workers Union voted overwhelmingly to authorize a strike should Delphi Corporation unilaterally impose changes to its labor agreements. Over 95% of the votes cast authorized the UAW to call a strike. The union's vote is response to the Troy-based auto supplier's request to U.S. bankruptcy judge Robert Drain last week to nullify labor contracts and eliminate retiree medical and life insurance benefits. The approval was expected but does not mean a strike is certain. Both sides are awaiting Drain's decision, which is not expected until June at the earliest. With $900 million in its strike fund, the UAW could afford a strike of significant length. The union currently offers $200 for a full week on strike or $40 a day for less than a full week. Striking workers also would receive UAW health insurance that would start when Delphi cuts those benefits. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Arlen Specter toned down his rhetoric about the NSA domestic spying today. Instead of seeking to have the FISA court issue a ruling on whether or not the domestic spying is illegal, he has instead agreed to allow the administration to retain an important legal defense by allowing the court, which holds its hearings in secret, to review the program only by hearing a challenge from a plaintiff with legal standing, said a person familiar with the text of language agreed to by Specter and committee conservatives. An expert in constitutional law and national security, however, said that the change would allow the administration to throw up huge obstacles to anyone seeking to challenge the program's legality. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Okay. I'm just to say welcome back. Oh, this is such a phony piece of radio carpet. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're right here, right now. I'm glad you're listening on your podcast. I'm glad you're listening to the archives. Mike, I heard earlier today from a listener, and I had no idea what was going on here, but I want to give him a plug for doing what he does. Apparently, we're linked on. Let me find it here. Takes me just a second. I'm terribly sorry. You know, these things are what they are. We are linked on MikeBlackwood.net, or have been. And I want to thank Mike Blackwood for linking to the program. And hello to those of you who are listening that way. And, of course, I would be remiss not to mention that we are having just a whale of a good time in the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. There's several of us in there chatting madly away. And you, too, of course, are welcome to join in most any time. The chat rooms are open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They seem to have their greatest activity during the times that this show is on. Our good friends Bruce Birch and John Fox have Fourth Estate Radio cranked up and cooking along on Saturday night. That's 10 p.m. Eastern time, Saturday night. Our good friend, we chat as well during our good friend Joe Vecchio's Cup of Joe radio program, Saturdays at 8 p.m. Eastern time, and also during Bruce Birch's All Things Sunday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern time. Chat rooms are open also during our good friend Guy James's program, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. All of us, brothers in arms, as it were, of the Head On Radio Network. I want to try something here. I have no idea if it will work. I freely admit that sometimes we are technologically challenged. But this is Tony Snow. This is a Tony Snow. I mean, this is the new White House spokesman. I'm not going to do a lot of setup on it, because I want you to hear it for yourself. His first live TV press gaggle, Tony Snow.
Then now invite both parties and both houses of Congress
and both houses of Congress
to roll up their sleeves and get working to try to get something done.
The president today denied that he's ever broken the law in terms of wiretaps. He also indicated that anything that was looked into, any call, had some sort of foreign aspect either to or from. And he says he's always obeyed the law. Are all these stories untrue that we've been reading for the last several days? Millions of Americans have been wiretapped. Turned over to the government.
Okay, let's try to segregate the stories here. What he said about the terror surveillance program is that these are foreign to domestic calls, and they were all done within the parameters of the law. He has not commented on the...
He said he didn't obey that law.
No, he didn't. about which this administration has no comment. But I would direct you back to the USA Today story itself, and if you analyze what that story said, what did it say? It said there is no wiretapping of individual calls. There is no personal information that is being relayed. There's no name. There is no address. There is no consequence of the calls. There's no description of who the party on the other end is.
Privacy was breached by turning over their phone numbers.
Well, again, you were jumping to conclusions about a program, the existence of which we will neither confirm nor deny. Because, what's interesting is there seems to be a notion that because the president has talked a little bit about one surveillance program and one matter of intelligence gathering, that somehow we have to tell the entire world we have to make intelligence gathering transparent. Let me remind you, it's a war on terror. And there are people, I guarantee you, Al-Qaeda does not believe, the president is not talking about breaking the law, but Al-Qaeda doesn't believe in transparency. What Al-Qaeda believes in is mayhem, and the president has a constitutional obligation and a heartfelt determination to make sure we fight it. Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And he believes in obeying it. Martha.
I think you might repeat the same thing, but why not declassify this? I mean, the president did talk about the surveillance program a day after the New York Times spoke that story. This would seem to affect far more people. And it did sound like the president was confirming that story today. He was answering Terry's question.
Well, if you go back and you look through what he said, there was a reference to foreign to domestic calls. I am not going to stand up here and presume to declassify any kind of program. That is a decision the president has to make. I can't confirm or deny it. The president was not confirming or denying. Again, I would take you back to the USA Today story simply to give you a little context. Look at the poll that appeared the following day. While there was part of it said 51% of the American people opposed. If you look at when people said, if there was a roster of phone numbers, do you feel comfortable with that? I'm paraphrasing and I apologize, but something like 64% of the public was not troubled by it. Having said that, I don't want to hug the tar baby of trying to comment on the program, the existence of the alleged program, the existence of which I can neither confirm nor deny.
But there are other polls that show Americans are very concerned about this.
But the president, you cannot base national security on poll numbers. As the president of the United States, you have to make your own judgments about what is in the nation's best interest. Well, I did bring it up because what you were talking about is how people were concerned about privacy issues, and I tried to relate to you what happened. It was interesting. When people were given the specifics in that story, they did not seem to be terribly troubled. Well, that may have more to do with the way it's being spun than the way it's actually... Go ahead.
I'm not going to hug that tar, baby. Now, I mean, do you understand? You get it. Sure you do. That's what, you know, thank you, Tony Snow, for coming along and just pop that Klan hood on for a minute there so we can see what you're really all about. But you know what's really disturbing is, like, there's one or two voices when he says tar, baby. There's one or two voices in the audience, and then they realize nobody else is laughing with them at the ugly little racist joke that the ugly little racist Tony Snow has just made. After all, now, oh, wait a minute, I'm not done yet. I'm not done yet at all, because why do I say that? Why do I call him ugly little racist Tony Snow? Because Tony Snow doesn't think that racism exists in this country anymore.
Here's the unmentionable secret. Racism isn't that big a deal anymore. No sensible person supports it. Nobody of importance preaches it. It's rapidly and thankfully becoming an ugly memory.
Yeah, that's right. No racism. Thank you, Tony. No racism anymore in America. So it's okay if he tells tar baby jokes. I'm just, like I said in talking with Andrew, I'm just surprised he didn't use the word that is usually... Or in its original connotations, preceded the words tar and baby. And you know damned well what word that is. I will not let it, not going to let it come across. But that, you know, these people are just nasty, hateful, little, filthy, little, clannish, you know, sure. I'll tell you what, we've got to take a break. when we come back, we will go to your phone calls. The number, of course, 877-443-2366, 877, the number for Head On. And email to Bob at headonradio.com. See how easy it is? Or maybe I'm wrong. I mean, maybe everybody goes around talking about hugging the car, baby. Maybe it doesn't have any, maybe it doesn't have any currency anymore. Maybe it doesn't have the racist currency. Maybe his next reference will be to Sambo. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Oh, have mercy, my only thought was to keep them extra clothes fall off.
This is Suffering the Odds, Mind Control Album Volume 1, Series 1. Welcome, stroke victim. Feel free to think for yourself. However, all independent actions from here out will be forbidden. You have had a stroke. Do not attempt to dance. Do not attempt to walk. Do not attempt to drive a car. Use the restroom alone or make a phone call. You will follow the instructions found on this record. Sit there silently and suffer the odds. Please turn the record over. Please turn the record over. Please turn the record over.
The odds are African Americans are twice as likely to suffer a stroke as white Americans. But there are steps you can take to help beat the odds. Call 1-888-4-STROKE or go to strokeassociation.org.
Join the power to end stroke.
Brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
What's it like?
What's it like?
It's lonely.
It's really lonely.
I miss my brother.
I miss my brother.
I'm surrounded by other people, but it's not the same.
I've got other people around me, but it's not the same.
It's pretty scary, but I don't let it rattle me.
It's pretty scary around here, but I don't let it rattle me.
You always have to watch your back.
There's no one to watch my back.
I spend my whole day worried who's out to get me.
I'm always wondering who's out to get me.
But I can take care of myself.
But I can take care of myself.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
It's not like I have a choice.
It's not like I have a choice.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
Go to jail for a gun crime and your family serves a sentence with you. Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
In the early hours after the tsunami, it was ham radio that was on the air, saving lives. When Florida was ripped by hurricanes, the hams were there. In the critical moments after the attack of 9/11, it was the hams who coordinated emergency messages. When disasters strike, the hams are ready. Ham radio works when other communications don't. To learn how you can become a ham radio operator, call the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, at 1-800-326-3942.
I'm Lee Hamilton.
And I'm Tom Kane. Together we chaired the 9/11 Commission.
We accomplished a lot because we worked together. Now we need your help.
You voted. Now stay interested and participate.
It's time to work together to do what's right for our country.
I'm a real wild one.
Wild one.
Wild one.
Wild one.
You know, it's always worth remembering that Lee Hamilton was the guy who whitewashed the Iran-Contra affair for Ronald Reagan from the Democratic side. If you go to Bart Kopp from time to time, I'm Bob Kincaid, by the way. If you go to Bart Kopp from time to time, whenever Lee Hamilton's name comes up, he'll show a picture of Lee Hamilton whitewashing a brick wall. And, you know, there's a reason he was eventually installed on the 9/11 Commission as well, because, you know, depending on what you do or don't believe about 9/11, the one thing that is abundantly clear is we didn't get the... I mean, you know, we're talking about, you know, sober, highly educated, real live, honest-to-Jesus experts who say that we did not get the full skinny from the 9/11 Commission. And, you know, why would we be surprised? Because we weren't supposed to get it. Oh, well. Let's go to the phones. Luke has been waiting a long time, calling from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, you're head on. Thanks for calling the program.
Well, you just mentioned that. I tell you what, that made me think about it. You know, if you go back to it, if you think of it, if the Democrats had stayed on their guns and went after Reagan the way they should have and impeached him for Iran-Contra, imagine how many of these parasites that are in the government now would have been in prison, or at the very least wouldn't have been able where they could have come back into the government.
Oh, I know. And how much of that plays into Poppy Bush's pardon of people like Casper Weinberger as well? Because if Weinberger had been allowed to sing
and
compelled to sing at trial... Oh, yeah, and Negroponte would have been in prison. Poindexter would have been in prison. Weinberger would have been in prison. George Bush the first most likely would have been in prison. Oh, yeah.
Oh, so you just think just because they thought, oh, well, we're doing something nice because we ain't going to impeach him in his last year. It's like, damn, they should have just sat there and had the trial. It would have been fun.
Well, you know, at the very least, the public would have gotten to see exactly how far gone Ronnie Reagan was at that time, because you remember they did depose him, and he sat there and said, well, it is my recollection that I don't recall if I remember.
Well, you know, both of them did. Him and George H.W. was like, well, I don't remember any of that. It's like, Lordy B, I didn't realize that was a disease that's communicable, because apparently George H.W. for a little while had it at the same time.
Oh, yeah, the recollection of remembrance disorder, sure.
I mean, I remember them going through, you know, saying how many of these guys had given the I don't remember answer so many times. It was like, God.
Well, you know, and it was Ben Bradley, editor of the Washington Post, who had, you know, sort of kind of gone to bat during the Nixon administration. It was Ben Bradley who said, well, you know, Reagan probably should be impeached, but he made one of those imperial decisions that the nation couldn't stand another constitutional crisis of impeaching Reagan.
Yeah, but you got to remember, Bradley and his wife are the two that when the Clintons came in, also remember how they treated them. These people aren't from here. They don't belong. I remember Sally Quinn saying that, and I was like, God. Just because you live in the town don't mean that the presidency is for the people that are working in there for the last 20 years.
Well, exactly, and who are they to decide? I mean, Washington's a transitory town to begin with.
Yeah.
Like the Reagans belonged?
What it's like, yeah, and you all live in downtown Washington? I don't think so.
No, not at all.
Okay. Well, first, let me go into what I was going to talk about. I'm sorry. Cut off the
no, that's okay.
Second. No,
all the time you need.
Have you noticed in all this fun stuff and talking about the NSA, other than on here on your stations or on maybe Air America or a couple, that on all these other, the mainstream media, every time they talk about the NSA, have you noticed how the word choice point does not come up?
No, and I've tried to make a point of mentioning that, and I know it's been mentioned on Air America as well. And it should be. But, of course, ChoicePoint is a huge, huge customer or provider. I don't know how you define the relationship, Luke, of the federal government.
Well, when you go back and you consider without ChoicePoint, George W. wouldn't be president.
Right.
I mean, that's their Jeb's part of Jeb's crime family, I guess you'd say. You know what I mean? They're the ones.
They're the ones. It was actually Catherine Harris's office who contracted with ChoicePoint to create the ban list and the felon list, you know, that had the people on it who'd never even been charged with a crime that disenfranchised so many voters in Florida in 2000. Sure.
And have you noticed in all this when it's been mentioned? I tell you, if you go to the stuff for Greg Blast, he's got a whole lot of stuff on it. That these guys have a reputation that is so bad, and now apparently in all this NSA stuff, they have a nice no-bid contract.
Oh, yeah, it's a beautiful thing. And do you remember also that it was shortly after the Congress banned the class action suits, Luke? Class action suits in state courts. It was shortly after that happened that it came out that ChoicePoint had been hacked for tons and tons of personal information from American citizens.
Well, like I say, the one I read the other day was they were talking about the fact that, I think it was in Illinois, where they were doing this DNA stuff, where they were working with, I guess, the state, and apparently had cases where the evidence wasn't there. Well, amazingly enough, Choice Point found the evidence, and then they found out Choice Point was making up the evidence as they went along.
Sure. And I think when you get right down to it, you're going to find out that Choice Point is, you know, up to its knuckles in what's going on with the NSA spying program. It can't help but be.
Well, the way it's described, I listened to Randy Rhodes, and she's been really on top of it. Apparently, the way it is it's really symbiotic, because some of this stuff that they say the government can't do, well, apparently Choice Point can, and it's sort of like, we pass it over to them, make it legal, and we bring it back over here where it's legal now, where we couldn't do it straight away. You know what I mean?
That's exactly.
If we go through them, then it's legal. If we do it ourselves, then it's illegal.
Right, because the government, that's another one of those twisted pieces of reasoning by the Bush administration. It is illegal for the government to collect that kind of information on private citizens, but they have since argued that it's not illegal for them to buy that kind of private information from a private contractor.
Who they, of course, have hired.
Right.
And were the ones they picked. And then you were talking a minute ago about the Supreme Court. Oh, yes, there they are, now four of them, because one of them has passed on.
Yeah.
And it's like, I still, to this day, always remember, it's like, okay, let's see, now five of you picked Bush, now let's see. Now, as I understand, two of you have children working in the Bush campaign, and one of you has a wife working in the Bush campaign. But none of you thought that was enough to recuse yourself. I just want to keep that real straight. Because Rehnquist and Scalia's sons were both working in the Bush campaign. And
that's
Trump's
right.
Wife was working in the Bush campaign. But, oh, no, that wouldn't influence them at all.
Well, heck no. You know, and that's the one flaw in the Supreme Court system, is that when they screw up like that and refuse to recuse themselves in a situation where it obviously should happen, there's only one remedy, Luke, and that's impeachment. We, you know, we won't enforce that. I mean, my God, Scalia should have been impeached over the duck hunting thing, for crying out loud.
Well, and then this last thing, you know, with the making the gesture and swearing up and down he didn't do it. Then here come the photos, and it's all of a sudden like, no, I didn't do that. Fuck.
Yeah, I know.
Then they have the photographer fired who took the picture.
Of course, yeah, they did fire the photographer. Of course, I suppose Scalia is just lucky he didn't get shot in the face.
Oh, I remember the first night that came on, and it was like, what was it, John Stewart said, who's the luckiest man in America? He said, Antonin Scalia. He was sitting there going, it could have been me.
Well, I mean, I wasn't trying to get too weepy or anything, Luke, but there really was, there's a profound difference. You know, when the god-awful little conservatives and Republicans talk about, you know, that's a pre-9/11 mindset, I want to go back to the pre-9/11 mindset when the Bill of Rights mattered.
Well, you know, the other thing, we talk about Dick Cheney, as I call him. You do notice,
that's a good one.
You notice, like I say, you and I talked about this, and we still to this day, no one's ever talked to the Swiss Miss.
Never. No. That's right. She just quietly disappeared.
I mean, you couldn't find any references to her. I mean, God. So.
No, and I'm sure that police report's completely classified by now.
Oh, we don't hang on to those. No, we took that out back and burned it. Didn't need it anymore. No, no, no. That case is closed.
Yeah, those papers are not in order.
Move along. These aren't the droids you're looking for. Move along.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No Swiss Miss, no, it was Judicial Watch, I think it was, that originally got the pipeline maps of Iraq that were contained in the Secret Energy Task Force documents.
Well, but have you...
Luke, we can't keep up with it, buddy.
Well, look at it tonight. Have you seen... Okay, I turned over a minute ago while I was sitting here. I've got the TV on mute. But let's see, of course, Larry King is doing celebrity interviews, and... Hannity and Combs are, of course, they're sitting here going, let's see, what were they? They were, of course, into the Duke rape case. And if you turn over to MSNBC, Chris Matthews has this obsession with the New Orleans mayoral race, so they're carrying the debate. And I'm sitting there going, you're a national cable channel, and you're carrying a city mayoral debate.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. And you know, at any given time, on or off the air, it's always fun to run over to CNN and just see what the headlines are and more importantly, what the headlines aren't.
Yeah.
In this particular instance, let's see. This is good. Vote shows fences before immigration plan. New 9/11 video shows Pentagon attack. Diplomat kidnapped at Baghdad Cultural Center. Search for passenger missing from cruise ship. Ah, now that'll be running to the top here pretty soon, don't you think?
No, it was a man. So that'll fade away probably.
Oh. But, you know. Not a cute white blonde girl.
No, apparently, I didn't read the whole story, but we were talking at work. Said, yeah, 2-3 drinks, amazingly enough. You got to wonder how many over the years the cruise ship companies just haven't let get reported on those. But I'd say that's probably more happens than what you think. Oh, and have you seen the other thing? Oh gosh, I'm sitting there flipping through channels, and I just hit the other thing. Get to see our probably 3 times a night if you want to watch him. Your repeat of Glenn Beck.
Oh, I haven't watched him yet. He drives me nuts. He's on the radio down here, Luke.
But it's like the first night he's on, there he is propositioning one of the news readers. It's like, God, you got to think, you know, somebody at CNN has to have some brain cell left, just one going, you know. But no, like I said, they hired him, so I mean, what can we expect?
This is Beck.
He may even halfway behave for a week or two. But like I say, the thing is, you were playing with Tony Snow and the Tar Baby thing. I'm just waiting for Beck. I mean, like, I'm sure one night you have Savage on or somebody for a guest.
Oh, I have no doubt whatsoever. He'll bury. It's not a question of how he'll get his foot in his mouth. The real question, Luke, is how he'll get the other one in there with it.
What you saw that was the first week he was on, I was saying he was already on a death watch. It's like he's just waiting to go off. It's like, yes, because he's gonna sit there and run it up for all the hype he can out of it. Oh, I tried playing spare and they threw me off the air. You know,
I'm persecuted. Oh, I know. Hey, Luke, we've got to take our break. Thanks so much, buddy.
See ya.
Have a great evening. Later. Oh yeah, boy! I tell you what, they get past the good news pretty quick. Kidman cruises on to new fiance. Spears sparks scowls over baby's seat. This is journalism. Oh God, let's take a break. It's time for one, and then we'll cruise downhill to the bottom, the tail end of the show. There's still time left to get your thoughts in if you want to. 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Moving forwards, using all my breath. Making love to you was never second best. I saw the world crashing all around your face. Never really knowing it was all.
Fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye baby by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball, while gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
While it's not on the front page, the genocide in Darfur, Western Sudan continues. Rapes and other physical attacks still occur regularly, and large-scale food shortages may be just around the corner. But there is something you can do to make sure the U.S. government takes action to end this nightmare. Over 1,000 people have made the pledge to call or email the White House every weekday until President Bush ensures the deployment of 44,000 peacekeeping troops in Darfur. Give a voice to your conscience. Visit DarfurPledge.org.
Lots of people talk about the ways that schools should inspire students to be creative. I'm Mary Chapin Carpenter. Business and education leaders say that young workers too often lack the creativity needed to remain flexible and excel on the job. Well, helping young minds tap their creativity is just as important as mastering math and English skills. When you look at today's educational landscape, one of the best places that creativity is actively encouraged is in music class. Music classrooms today are like deep wells of creative energy just waiting to be explored by young minds. Don't let it go to waste.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. March is Music in Our Schools Month. Music, part of a sound education.
Tony Snow for just a moment, if I may, please. Because in addition to the stupid, typical, racist little comment about the tar baby, Tony also did the little crying jag, the televangelist thing as well. And what that particular, that was talking about the fact that he had beaten cancer, colon cancer. And he stood up there and he, and got all tearful. And then he had the nerve to say, look, I'm having my Edmund Muskie moment. Now, I was just a kid. My God, that was the 1972 campaign, so... I was just turning 9. But I was a geek. I followed politics back then. Because I had family that followed politics. But do you remember the whole Edmund Muskie thing? What was it? He cried on the steps of the courthouse in, what, Augusta, Maine? And he had very strong, was it 1972 or 19? That was a Nixon dirty trick. And Edmund Muskie was an extremely decent, upstanding, good human being, a senator from Maine. And by virtue of dirty tricks put forward by the Nixon administration, the same kind of dirty tricks that Karl Rove has perfected, the unindicted thus far, Karl Rove. And it all had to do... the Muskie thing. It had to do with something called the Canuck. The Canuck letter. And Donald Segretti, he was a, you know, he was a member of CREEP, the Committee to Re-Elect the President for Nixon. And he dummied up a letter on Senator Muskie's letterhead. And purported that it was Muskie's. And he said that Henry Scoop Jackson, Senator Jackson, against whom Muskie was running, alleged that he had fathered an illegitimate child with a 17-year-old. These were the dirty tricks that were perfected by the Nixon administration. And at one point in the campaign, Muskie, running together for me, sorry, Muskie broke down in tears and cried. And because he was unmanly, he was deemed unelectable, and he lost the race for the Democratic nomination, which ultimately went to a good and decent human being whom the Nixon minister, George McGovern, a real veteran of the Second World War, whom the Nixon administration then trained their guns on. So understand that, that when Tony Snow said, "I'm having my Muskie moment," understand he's making light of the kind of political filth that informs Republican politics. He thinks it's funny. He looks back on the so-called Canuck letter, and he thinks it's a real knee-slapper. Where you are with the Republicans. That's where you are with Tony Snow. But moreover, he stood up there and he talked about how he had beaten cancer. And he's a Republican, of course. And he is allied with people who don't even, you know, cancer cells mutate. And mutation is a form of evolution. And they don't even believe that happens. And yet he was cured of it. Not by the laying on of hands, mind you. But by hardcore science that he was able to avail himself of because he had some of the best health insurance coverage in the world. And he rolled into the hospital and they said, "Yes, Mr. Snow, we'll treat you. We'll give you the best that money has to offer. The best medicine you can possibly purchase is all yours because you get on, you get on the radio and you get on the TV and you lie your ass off every day for Fox News." And then he goes on and he says, you know, the state of modern medicine, what they've done with medical treatments for cancer, it's a miracle. And I heard that and just went screaming around the room. Not a miracle. It is the product of a hell of a lot of hard work. And a hell of a lot of hard work needs yet to be done. But of course, the guy that Tony Snow works for and the party that Tony Snow works for, just a couple of weeks ago, slashed millions and millions and millions of dollars from programs that would advance that kind of research. You know, because the only purpose this government has is to blow up children in their beds in Iraq and plan wars against Iran. And he survives cancer because he has the most advanced medical coverage available. And he steps back and says, "It's a miracle. It's a miracle." What an insult that is to every doctor who saved his sorry life. It's a miracle. No miracles. It's just medical science. It was just the effort of a lot of intelligent, brilliant, driven men and women who saw that, my God, colon cancer is a terrible way to die. Not that I've found any really good ones. says, you know, I lost my father to the same disease. But I beat it. I beat it. I beat cancer. And the advances that they've made in cancer treatment, well, it's just a miracle. My left hind foot, it's a miracle. Because if it was a miracle, it would happen for poor people in the United States. If it was a miracle, it would happen for people who have no medical coverage for things like chemotherapy in the United States. But it's not a miracle because people die of colon cancer in this country. People who don't have Fox News' health care coverage die of colon cancer in this country. I loathe him for a reason. That was a slap in the face to every single worker in America who gets up and goes out and does their job and then goes to another job and does that and probably has a job on the weekend and they bust their ass 7 days a week and they try to make sure the kids are fed and clothed and look respectable in school because, you know, if you don't look, you know, if the kids don't look right, you know, you get the visit and... And there aren't any miracles for them. And if you suggested that that some working stiff should have access to the same kind of miracles that Tony Snow had, he'd tell you it was communism. It was socialized medicine. And that America would fall and cease to be great if we had that kind of thing going on here. So forgive me if that rather gets under my skin. And it's something that sort of started boiling around in my head when I took our son to Ivy Green, to where Helen Keller was a child and grew up. And we sort of, the guide that was with us, there was nobody looking, so she opened the gate and let him go in and actually touch the pump. Over her hands. And the lady said, and this is where the miracle took place. And it dawned on me. That was no miracle. That was a triumph of human will and human determination. And an absolute amazing display of the profound power of human desire. That little child, little Helen Keller, was stricken with what we believe was scarlet fever at something like 18 months, but she had started talking. And she was saying, Mama, and Papa, and Wawa. And through all the darkness, and through all the soundless depths in which she lived as a child of 8 or 9 years old. That water ran over her hand and something fired, the hard wiring that her brain had received up to the age of 18 months, it rediscovered itself and Annie Sullivan, a blind woman herself, was spelling W-A-T-E-R into her hand, and Helen Keller that clicked that was the cool, wet stuff running over her hand, and she said, water! And some bastard said that, William Gibson, some said that that was a miracle, and it wasn't. It was a triumph of human intellect. And it is a triumph of human intellect that people don't die in such amazing numbers in misery and hell and grief of colon cancer like they did in the past. It's not a miracle. It is a testament to the human spirit. But Tony Snow can't say that because he works for a gang that don't believe in the human in human determination. They believe that 1 + 1 = 2 because a miracle happens.
I am grown weary of miracles. I am grown tired of a political party and people who adhere to a political philosophy that says that we are too weak as a people to make things better. If we are Democrats, if we are progressives, if we are liberals, if we are dedicated to the proposition that things can get better, we'd best not be laying about and waiting for the miracles. I think about some of my misspent youth wandering around parking. You know, I usually had a ticket for Grateful Dead shows. And inevitably there was some barefoot dude walking through the parking lot with a hacky sack in his pocket and a cheese sandwich in the other hand and a sign in one, holding it up as he walked. Need a miracle, need a miracle, need a miracle, need a ticket, need a miracle, need a ticket. Need a miracle. Of course there's that dead, you know, there's a song, you know, need a miracle every day. But I tell you what, we had better eschew miracles. Because miracles will not give us the House of Representatives in November. Miracles will not give us the Senate in November. Miracles will not give us the White House in 2008 or expand a Democratic majority in either House. There is only one thing that will accomplish those goals, and that is determination and sublime acts of human will bent on saving this nation. No miracles, please. You want to save America? You want to stop a war? You want to stop a madman in office? Well, tell you what, you can in one hand and put your miracles in the other and see which one fills up fastest. You want to make sure that crying children can go to the doctor when they're sick if they just happen not to be as wealthy as Tony Snow, then you'd best not be waiting on any miracles. The Children's Miracle Network does wonderful work to provide medical care to children. I wish to God they wouldn't call it the Children's Miracle Network. Because it's not a miracle that somebody reaches into their pocket and hauls out a dollar and drops it in a bucket. That is not a miracle. That is an act of human courage. No miracles, please. No miracles. You give me determination, but no miracles. Let's go to the phones. Wayne is with us. Hey, Wayne, you're head on, man. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Bob, the miracle we need is getting people out to vote. That's the miracle. And, you know, we got to get working people up off their butt and somehow inspire them to go vote. Because I truly believe if that'll happen, we'll sweep both the House and the Senate.
I think you're right, and I think you understand with your you got your tongue in your cheek a little bit. That ain't going to be no miracle. That's going to be because we're willing to work hard enough to make it happen.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. You know, somehow, I think about it every day with our primary just over and a 23% voter turnout. That haunts me every day, how we can inspire people to get out there and vote. Because we have the numbers. The Democrats have, progressive liberals have the numbers. We just have to get them motivated to get to the polls, man.
Yeah, because at 23%, man, you can make those little funky electronic machines do all kinds of tricks.
Yeah, you certainly can. You certainly can. And that's what has to be, that's how you defeat the machines, is by overwhelming them. I mean, well, I think you talked about that the other night, or Bruce did, or somebody. If we have the numbers, it's awful hard to mess with. Overwhelming numbers. And, you know, I always, you know, I have to believe that we can do that because that's what I work towards most of the time. And we'll continue to do that.
Yeah, but that's the thing. What happens good and happens right happens because of your efforts and the efforts of other people like you.
Right, and then, you know.
No magic involved, you know.
No magic, and if you don't want to claim what your hard work done, then you could call it a miracle. That's all.
Yeah, and there's that aspect to it. I don't care. You call it cabbage. I don't care what you call it, as long as it gets us a majority in November.
That's exactly right. Call it whatever you want, just as long as we do that. So, and, you know, well, like I said, I got great hope. I mean, then I won't have to. I've been working all day on a damn, you know, how to figure out how to cover everything for this recount coming up in a local senatorial district, you know, by 17 votes. So, but we'll do it. That's just all.
Oh, yeah.
Do. So,
just hard work.
That's exactly what it is. I know it's getting awful close, buddy. I'm sorry I waited this long to call, but
that's okay. That's okay. Thanks a lot, man.
All right, we'll be talking to you.
Okay.
Bye.
Later. Bye. So, call it a miracle, call it hard work, call it what you will. We're going to call it a day. The show tonight was ably and wonderfully produced by my lovely wife, Agnes, there at the home studios in the wilds of wonderful West Virginia. It was announced by Brian Reznor. Our chief engineer is John Fox. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computers makes the computers behave. Our good friend Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org archives and streams this and every other program on the Head On Radio Network. And a lot of other great liberal talk as well. Check it out. The show comes to you every evening, and every show on the Head On Radio Network comes to you, because the thousands of members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights, they get up and they go to work every day, and they work to build the American dream, and by their efforts they support the growth of this network, and in the growth of this network they strive to preserve the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.